This is Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, where people from our firm share their insights on developments currently shaping markets, industries, and the global economy. I'm Jake Seward, Global Head of Corporate Communications here at the firm. Goldman Sachs Asset Management, also known as GSAM, recently named Hugh Lawson its Global Head of Environmental, Social, and Governance Efforts. Hugh joins me today to discuss his new role and what sustainable investing means for Goldman Sachs. Hugh, congratulations on the new role and welcome to the program.
Delighted to be here.
Hugh, ESG is becoming increasingly familiar to investment professionals today, but it's not a phrase that is as familiar to broader audiences. What does environmental, social, and governance mean in the context of financial services?
Right. So, well, you said it there, Jake. So ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance related issues. And they tend to cluster around a series of concerns. The first broad one is resource usage and climate. So that would be the environment. It could be things like efficient water usage. It could be waste treatment. It could be moving to a lower carbon economy, a whole host of issues around that. The social tends to refer to a range of things. One of it is delivering opportunities into communities that need them. It could be in areas of housing. It could be in areas of education. It could be in areas of access to credit. And the governance is a much broader issue that tends to relate to the alignment that the leadership of corporations have with their shareholders and a whole host of issues there. So that's what ESG means. When people say that they're investing consistent with ESG practices, that can mean a lot of things. It can mean we're focused on sustainability in the sense of enduringness. So we want to make sure that the companies in our portfolio, their business models are viable for the long term. It can mean a much greater alignment between a broader set of values in the portfolio. So there may be a series of financial returns that we're seeking, but we want to amplify our value set through our investing.
So how is it different from conventional investing? And within ESG, some people talk about impact investing. We hear that phrase a lot recently. How does that fit into what we're talking about today?
Right. Well, the first thing to note about ESG investing is it is investing. So I think one needs to differentiate oneself from when you're providing capital for financial return and you want to have or amplify an ESG value and versus something that is philanthropic in nature. So first characteristic of ESG investing is it's investing like conventional investing. The second issue, though, is conventional investing tends to focus primarily on earning a financial return, and in many cases, earning a financial return with regard to a passive benchmark that has been specified. That's the primary objective. ESG investing goes a step further and says there may be a set of broader values that the asset owner has that they want to amplify as being desirable or amplify, frankly, as needing to change. And so ESG investing in liquid markets is really about value alignment with your portfolio while you're pursuing a financial return. Impact investing then goes a step further and says, I would like to stimulate a tangible, measurable outcome for a series of stakeholders, could be a community, could be a bit of technology related to the environment, whatever the broader stakeholder may be, I'd like an outcome while I'm earning a financial return. So most impact investing tends to be in private markets where you have a little bit more control with the underlying project. And so that takes the ESG lens a little bit further.
So Goldman just announced an acquisition in this space. What's the opportunity there and why is Goldman building its presence out?
So, you know, within GSAM, we work strategically with our clients to solve their most challenging investment issues. That's our primary mission. Those issues span the gamut. They can be asset allocation related, portfolio construction related. It can be about the provision of discrete asset classes. What we've found over the last few years is an increasing number of our clients across the spectrum, so this is both institutional investors as well as individuals, have a real interest in at least asking the question, how does my portfolio line up with my broader mission, if you're, say, a foundation, or my broader set of values, if you're an individual? So there's a measurement and analytical aspect to ESG investing that we want to be a market leader in. Imprint Capital is a leader in that. Second issue is many of these portfolios, after they've measured where they stand, want to think about taking action. And so much of the action that one might take in an ESG lens lends itself to best practices in risk management and in portfolio construction, but you're optimizing a slightly different set of variables. You're optimizing value alignment and impact. Imprint Capital, for nearly a decade, has, we believe, has been a market leader in helping clients define their programs as well as measure these issues, and they've sourced an extensive array of investments for clients in both public markets and private markets. And so by having them join Goldman Sachs, we believe it will make us a market leader in sourcing these investments and working with clients on their programs.
So take us through the history a little bit. The analytics have obviously gotten much more sophisticated than early days around ESG. How has the market evolved since it began, I don't know, 15, 20 odd years ago?
So the first chapter in what's broadly known as ESG now was really SRI investing, so socially responsible investing. That tended to be screening related. And so an investor may find a certain set of activities to be not to their liking, and
So they just didn't invest in
they
those
just
at all.
didn't want to invest in them.
Right.
The problem or the challenge with doing that is it's not purposeful in amplifying what you are investing in. Second issue is it introduces an interesting degree of risk relative to what your asset allocation was driving at. So let me give you an example. Simple portfolio, let's say it was 70-30, and the 70 was represented by the S&P 500. That has a set of expected return and risk characteristics. If you then start excluding whole industries or segments of that portfolio, you've introduced what's known as tracking error. So the portfolio that you end up with will behave differently than where you were starting and what you were counting on from your asset allocation. So I would say best practice today would be, first of all, we'd want to measure the risks that are being introduced into the portfolio by their adjustment, and we may want to control for them. So there may be a limited amount of risk that's tolerable. We'd want to at least know about it. We may want to control about it. Much of ESG investing can be a dynamic process. And so by that, I mean, let's say you wanted to amplify the norm of moving to a lower carbon economy. Within every industry, there are leaders in that and maybe laggards in that. There's a way in which you could construct a portfolio that emphasized the leaders, underemphasized the laggards. You could control for tracking error.
Rather than just excluding the entire
Exactly, rather than just
sector,
excluding them.
yeah.
What's interesting, though, is over time, the leaders and laggards may change. So by introducing a degree of dynamism where you're constantly monitoring, so you give yourself a simple metric, I want to minimize emissions per unit of tracking error, you can make sure that you're diligent on that metric over time. And so it becomes a more dynamic process than a simple exclusion.
So outside of your day job, Hugh, you serve on the board of a foundation that recently went through a transition in this space. The foundation made a decision to change its portfolio, its investment portfolio, because they thought it should be more harmonized with the work they were underwriting as a philanthropy. Once the fund had made that decision, how did it implement it and change its investment portfolio to be closer aligned with the work it was supporting through its grant making?
It's very interesting. It's the Rockefeller Brothers Fund is the organization to which you're referring, Jake, and they've stated a goal of divesting from fossil fuels prudently over the next few years. We are maintaining our return objective, which is an ambitious one, inflation plus 5%, and we don't want to introduce any additional risks to the portfolio as part of this process. So it's meant to be done in a robust manner. So we've taken a phased approach to it. Step one is that we took a step of divesting from coal in the early stages. Coal is a very carbon-intensive fuel. It's one that there are plenty of substitutions for. And in the portfolio, we can do it in a way that we believe doesn't increase our risks, and to the contrary, we think is a smart investment decision. That was step one. Step two is to look at fossil fuels more broadly in the portfolio. And there we've committed to having them be less than 5% of the portfolio, and with the number decreasing over time. And so we've made some adjustments to the portfolio. We're now under that 5% threshold. Again, the investment committee's view is we haven't compromised our return profile or increased our risks at all. What we need to do, though, is as we continue to make progress, maintain that. And so that's where we're spending time on thinking about how to do that. The third aspect is there's a commitment to making impact investments. So we would like 10% of the portfolio, and hopefully over time, more in impact investments that are consistent with the fund's mission. And so there,
10% is a big number to put in that field.
Big number. So today we are in the lower end of that 10%. So we're doing it in a phased approach. We've declined many investment opportunities that have come across our desk. We've made a few. So again, our goal there is to be judicious and prudent in how we do it. And so we would expect to hit that number in the next few years. What's encouraging, I would say, is I can think of one investment we recently committed to in the infrastructure space. The general partner, long track record, had done a lot of very interesting investments, and this is outside the United States. But a few of those investments related to areas of carbon that were a priority for us to avoid. So we were able to go to that manager, and he customized a vehicle for us that pursued most of the investments that he did, but he adjusted for us given our priority on decarbonizing the portfolio.
You were able to find an infrastructure fund that had a track record of excellence, but wasn't fully decarbonized, but you went to them with this opportunity and they were able to craft a solution. Is that going to be an innovation that we see more of in the space?
Yes, I think many of the leading asset managers in both public and private markets are thinking how to respond to their clients' interests in impact investing in a way that's robust. And so I think a tremendous win for the industry is if managers that have a demonstrated track record of excellence in investing are able to offer solutions for their clients that want a particular value alignment. I think that would be a tremendous victory for the industry. And one of the things that we're focused on is making sure that we use our buying power to encourage established managers to do that on behalf of our clients. At the same time, of course, it's terrific to have innovation and new blood in the industry. So there are many newer funds out there or newer managers who are committed to ESG principles, who are bringing their skills to the market. And I think there's a place for that as well.
Hugh, Goldman's put out a lot of research about how the millennials are changing industries really across the board as they enter the workforce and as their buying habits change things. In this space, millennials have been exposed to these debates on campus about endowments and how endowments are invested. Do you see that playing a role in this space as the millennials get more involved in investment decisions?
Well, we do. We see certainly the effect on our endowment clients where there's a broad group of stakeholders who are of the millennial generation. Within the high net worth segment, as wealth is now passing down the generations, very early in our engagement with these clients, there'll be an important question about how do I line up my portfolio with my values? So I think from that sense, the generational change is in part of the why we see this trend.
Take us through a typical investment decision, if there even really is one. Let's say I'm the chief investment officer of a large college endowment, and I'm looking to allocate my resources in keeping with some ESG principles that we've developed at the college. How does Goldman Sachs help me in that situation?
Well, the first thing is the chief investment officer will have a governing set of documents that set a series of objectives for that portfolio and then the fiduciary standard that he or she and the investment committee need to exercise. So the first thing we would do is we'd want to take a look at that. And in most cases, these documents focus on a return objective within a risk framework. And so the question is that many investment committees would ask of this is by altering the portfolio in light of our broader objectives, are we doing anything to compromise our fiduciary duty and the expected return of the portfolio, or are we introducing unknown risks? So the first question would be, let's do this as a risk management exercise. What can we do to align the portfolio with a set of values that in good faith we believe doesn't compromise the expected return or increase the risk? So what is possible will really depend on the depth of the aspiration there. And generally speaking, what we find is it doesn't lend itself to all or nothing answers. But coming back to your question, what we would do with the chief investment officer is offer a series of solutions for making incremental improvements while preserving the return characteristics and risk characteristics. It would involve some action in liquid markets. There'd be things you could do with the equity portfolio, the fixed income portfolio. And then you might move into the impact space where the client would want to have an affirmative effect. And there may be some private market opportunities that stand up well from a conventional lens that both have a decent return prospect, but also can move the ball forward on their value. So we'd work with them there.
So, in your new role, have you set some goals for where you think Goldman Sachs ought to be in the next several years? Some short-term goals and some longer-term goals. We're not starting from scratch,
Nope.
but it's a new role
Nope.
and it's a growing asset class. And so, how do you think about what you might be able to achieve in the near and medium term?
Well, I think there are two things that we're very much focused on. So with our colleagues from Impact Capital joining, we're now in a position to offer broad portfolio solutions in a range of themes around ESG. And so my aspiration for us in the next few years is to be able to do some significant portfolios for clients in that regard. The tools are getting a little bit better, the information is getting a little bit deeper, and so I would expect within our portfolio teams that ESG will become more widely used and more deeply used. So I think it's two things. I think it's solving client problems that want to align their values with their ESG objectives and doing that, but it's also making sure that ESG as a risk factor or series of risk factors is soundly integrated in all of our investment processes.
One last question. 10 years ago, when Goldman Sachs published its environmental policy framework, the ESG market in the United States was approximately $2 trillion. Today, that number in the United States has tripled, and globally, ESG assets under management have reached $21 trillion, a 61% increase just in the last 3 years. Hugh, those are big numbers, and do you think this trend of growth in the space is here to stay?
Well, we think there's going to be quite a bit more out there as institutions really, in a world where information is so ubiquitous and it's very important to consider your overall mission with your portfolio, we find insurance companies, public pensions, endowments, foundations, family offices, high net worth individuals, official institutions being asked by their stakeholders how do they line up vis-a-vis a set of these issues and what are they doing to further them. And so we think ESG investing has gone, in essence, mainstream, and that most investments going forward will need a degree of awareness of ESG factors at a minimum, and then at a more extreme sense, people will be deploying capital there.
Great. Thanks, Hugh. Thanks for coming by. That concludes this episode of Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. I'm Jake Seward. Thanks for listening.
This podcast was recorded on July 14th, 2015. The views and opinions expressed herein should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and such views and opinions may differ from those of Goldman Sachs Global Investment Research or other departments or divisions of Goldman Sachs and its affiliates. This information may not be current, and Goldman Sachs has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. Neither Goldman Sachs nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast and any liability therefor, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. Goldman Sachs is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. In addition, the receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any Goldman Sachs entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any Goldman Sachs entity.